Welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Going to East Kirkby and seeing the Lancaster running its engines and taxiing about, that was fantastic. And then seeing the other Lancaster, the BBMF one, displaying at Shuttleworth. First time I've ever seen a Lancaster in the air. It was also the first time I've ever seen a B-17 in the air. He kept looking at me and saying, "The smile on your face." You know, because I had the hugest grin for 2 days just watching all the stuff that I'd never seen before. Swordfish. I mean, seeing the swordfish in the air, you know, you just don't get to see that anywhere else in the world.
Welcome to Extended, your aerospace radio station.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Last year, Dave Homewood from the Wings Over New Zealand podcast visited the UK to record and document Kiwi aviation involvement in World War II. He visited our historic aircraft, museums, airfields and memorials. And we spoke to Dave back on episode 180, and he loved it so much, he's coming back, not only onto Extended, but to the UK. Dave, welcome back to Extended.
Hi, Peter. How you going?
Yeah, really, really good. Just remind us where you're calling from, Dave, today.
I'm in Cambridge, New Zealand, which is in the North Island of New Zealand, down in the Pacific.
And just before we talk about the Wings Over Britain features that you produced, just tell us, we've worked together on the Coastal Command series and some other bits and pieces, but for those who don't know much about your background and your podcast, can you give us a brief overview?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I sort of grew up always interested in aviation. My dad was into it and he got me into it. And when I was aged 18, I joined the Royal New Zealand Air Force, and I became a what's called a safety and surface worker, which it was all the safety and survival gear, parachutes, life rafts, all that kind of thing. Plus, we did upholstery. Plus, we did aircraft painting. It was a jack of all trades. And while I was in the Air Force, I started to get a real appreciation for the history, because I used to spend a bit of time at the Air Force Museum when I was based at Wigram. And I used to talk to a lot of the veterans there, World War II veterans who were the volunteer guides, and it really got me into the history. And then several years after I left the Air Force, still interested, I started to wonder about the history of my town and who had been in the Air Force from here of Cambridge, New Zealand, World War II. So I started doing a bit of research and expected maybe about, you know, 20 people. And I think I've got 250 people now that served in the Air Force, and there were all sorts of interesting people. I mean, fighter aces and, you know, top bomber guys, all this sort of thing. And so I eventually started compiling that together into a website, and I called that Wings Over Cambridge. And that went up online in 2004. I think it was. So it's about 20 years old. And it might have been late 2003, actually. And as a result of the website going up there, a lot of people would find it through Google and they would message me asking questions. And I found that often it was the same question coming from different people. And I thought, God, it'd be really good if there was a place where someone could ask a question and everybody else could read it publicly. And at that's so I don't have to keep, you know, giving the same answer over and over. At that stage, I was sort of an avid member of the Flypass Forum, the British key publishing forum. I thought that was brilliant, and I thought, God, it'd be really good to have a New Zealand aviation forum. And so I set it up, and that was in February 2005. I set up what was then Wings Over Cambridge Forum, and it was specifically for World War II RNZF discussion. And then it's people started joining, and then people would suggest, hey, can we have this, can we have that? And it just expanded and expanded to right out to all aspects of aviation in New Zealand. So it's not just military, it's not just World War II. There's all the civilian side of things, top dressing and gliding and all sorts of things like that. It's become a sort of real hub of New Zealand aviation. Everybody's there, everybody reads it. It's brought a lot of different aspects of aviation together, where we've sort of cross-pollinated and all that sort of thing. And it totally unexpected. It was never meant to do that, and it's become brilliant.
Yeah.
So you can ask almost any question there and somebody will have the answer, and they usually have photos. It's quite good. And so that, I think after a couple of years, we changed the name to Wings Over New Zealand because it had expanded so much, rather than Wings Over Cambridge Forum. There's still people who call it Wings Over Cambridge Forum, but it's been Wings Over New Zealand for about 18 years now, or 17 years. And then in 2011, I had become quite for a couple of years, I'd been quite a fan of a few podcasts, and one of them was Warbird Radio. And I suddenly realized one day I had been doing quite a few interviews at that stage with World War II veterans and stuff like that. And I thought, hang on, I've got all the skills to do this. If I could work out how to get stuff onto the internet, I could have my own podcast. And that's how that kind of started. And it just sort of was established as a branch off the forum. So that's why it's the Wings Over New Zealand show. And it's sort of taken on its own life now. And just a few weeks back, I put up the 300th episode, so it's not gone too bad.
Yeah, saw that. Congratulations. And to put that into context, these aren't short episodes. You're not really into the sort of 10, 15 minute episodes. These are detailed features, most of these. So that 300 episodes is quite a lot of work in comparison to, I think, what a lot of more modern day podcasts, short and punchy, are. They're much more feature based, aren't they?
The whole philosophy I have is, if there's a story to be told, let the people tell it. So if it's a short one, I mean, there are a few short ones in there. If it's a short one, just, you know, don't press it to make it longer. But if there's a long one, you know, tell the story, because the way I look at it, there's other mediums that you can tell a story in, and one is print, which I also do for my job. I'm a magazine editor. You can only fit a number of words, you know, you might only have, like, for a decent size article, you might only get 1500 words into it. And most of the time it's a lot smaller than that. You can't fit a whole story into print. You got radio, and radio is always limited by time, and you get a slot and you have to try and fit your story into that. And the way I see it is, podcasting is the best medium for telling the story without having to cut it down, if you see what I mean, like, to tell the whole story. Because there's no restraints, like, there's no word limit, there's no time limit. So if you can tell the story and tell it well, but it takes 2 hours, then go ahead and do it, because you're not just telling a story for somebody's entertainment for one day. It's also archiving that story for history's sake. And when I look back over the 300 episodes, what's now 303, I think I've released, there's a lot of people in there who are no longer with us, and they can't tell that story to us anymore. So I'm glad that I've sort of done that in deep detail to try and get as much recorded as possible.
Yeah, and I've gone on record before. I really have enjoyed the episodes, not so much because it's story time, which, you know, to be honest, in this world, of sound bites is quite something. But also, as you say, for the historical relevance of a lot of it, and the unique coverage that you've brought to, particularly to the New Zealand angle, as I mentioned, not only of World War II, but quite heavily focused on that. So let's come back to the Wings Over Britain, Dave. You visited the UK last year, and in your own words, it was quite an extraordinary event. What made the visit so special for you?
Oh, there's so many things that made it special. I mean, that trip is something I'd wanted to do for years, literally years. And I had been planning it and was meant to go in June 2020. And of course, that didn't happen because we all got locked up. So I spent...
Because I didn't think at one time it was going to happen, was it? It was all looking like it wasn't just going to happen at all.
Yeah, no, it was pretty grim. And I mean, it all came together in the end. And I think one of the best things about getting there, I'd done a lot of planning. I'd contacted a lot of people beforehand, done a lot of research and all that. But the fact that there were so many great people in Britain who were willing to go, hey, yeah, come stay with me, or, you know, meet up with me. I'll show you around certain place. You know, and have all those sort of local experts who willingly would help out, and they'd come on the podcast and do an interview and that. And it was really, really enjoyable. I was there for 5 weeks. I was traveling around almost constantly. Every day I was going to a new place, and I didn't record at everywhere I went, simply because some of the places, yeah, I just didn't have anyone to record with. But I think I got, I don't know, it was over 20 episodes that came out of it.
Yeah, there's 20 episodes that you released. And just for the listeners' sake, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, we list all the 20 episodes on the show notes for this episode. And I just want to, Dave, this might be a bit boring, but let me read out some of the areas you covered. Ross Boyans, Navy Wings, Brooklands, Biggin Hill, Fleet Air Arm Museum, Sandy Spitfire, Shuttleworth, East Kirby, the International Bomber Command Centre, Dave Head Gledhill, the Battle of Britain Memorial Flight, de Havilland Museum, RAF Museum, Andy Saunders, Steve Bridgewater, RAF Hornchurch, Imperial War Museum, Duxford, RAF Bottisham, RAF Hunsdon, and Sarah Carr at the Old Flying Machine Company. I mean, if that is not a wrap-up of World War II aviation, what is? I mean, just quite a terrific group of episodes that you managed to record in that time. Do you have a favourite?
That's a hard one to say, but
I know. You know, they were the spot there.
They were all really, really great. They were. It was great to meet the people. It was great to get really good interviews. I certainly the last one that I've put out is the current episode. Was a really, really enjoyable one to make, and that was meeting Sarah Carr. Because, you know, Ray Hanna, her dad, and Mark Hanna, her brother, they were international heroes, not just national heroes, but international heroes. They used to come and fly here in New Zealand, put on displays, and they were known all around Europe and Britain and around the world, really. And it was just wonderful to sit down with her and, you know, hear the stories of her growing up with them, and just get that access to a family member who normally doesn't get the credit that like they did. And, you know, she's a lovely lady, absolutely wonderful storyteller. Her memory's as sharp as anything. It was just really, really cool. I did enjoy that. The very first episode I recorded when I got there was the one with Ross Boyans. And he I only found out about him only a couple of weeks before I set off for England, and it turns out, just by looking through old newspapers looking for something else entirely, I found a little article saying that this New Zealander had been flying in the Falkland Islands and Harriers. And I was like, Well, I've never heard of him before. I knew of another guy that had, but and so I checked with a few friends that are more expert on the Falklands, and they hadn't heard of him. And I was like, oh man, it'd be good to track him down. And luckily, through the Googling and a contact that I've got, a friend who knew of a friend, and I ended up getting in touch with him, and he happened to be living in a village that I was actually planning to go to anyway. So I said, hey, can I come over and do an interview? And yeah, no worries. And you know, he's still absolutely Kiwi, even though he's lived there since the 1970s. And he not only flew a Harrier down to the Falkland Islands, but he also flew in the Red Arrows. So you know, that was an absolute bonus for me. It was brilliant.
And yeah, it kicked off the whole series, didn't it? It really did. And for those of you who haven't listened to many or all of these, don't be dissuaded by it feeling like a New Zealand angle. They definitely aren't. I mean, obviously, you've got to focus on that. But I think the thing that really jumped out to me, Dave, in the content was I learned so much about so many things that I just didn't even know about RAF Hunsdon, for example, and Bottisham, and the passion that came out on some of those interviews of the people involved. You know, hearing Andy Saunders, you know, we've all read many of his books, but it was great to hear him talking about World War II aviation and East Kirby and Shuttleworth and all those things, and the passion in your voice. You know, it sort of felt like a busman's holiday for all of us, even though we're sat on top of it, most of us here.
Yeah, I'm glad that it didn't feel too Kiwi. I wanted to, you know, weave a little bit of New Zealand history into the series, but it was really about discovering the British history and promoting what's going on over there. It's amazing though how often New Zealand connections do crop up. I mean, you know, I went to Brooklands and that's a fantastic museum, and I expected it to be good, but I was blown away by how good it is. And but what was brilliant is that Alan Wynne, who was one of the chaps who was really responsible for how good that place looks, is a Kiwi, and he's lived over in Britain for years. And so you know, there's Kiwis everywhere in Britain, and it's really, really interesting to find all those little connections.
And Dave, how does one go about the logistics for something like this? Because I mean, 20 episodes for me, one episode is a lot of work. You know, you're getting your guests lined up, you're arranging transport, you're going to places, setting things up. You must have been bushed when you got home. It's quite an enormous undertaking.
All of the interviews were pre-arranged before I left. I'd track people down through Facebook or the internet, going through their websites if it was a museum, and just, you know, setting up, you know, I'd like to come and visit you on a certain day and do an interview. And so that, you know, that's pretty much what I do at home with the rest of the series anyway. But I think traveling pretty much most days from one place to the next, it was a little bit tiring, but it wasn't too bad. But yeah, when I get home, oh boy, you know, I arrived back on the 1st of August, and I think I wasn't actually back to normal till about the 15th of August. I had the worst jet lag I've ever had. In that time, I'd already, actually while I was in England, I started doing the editing of these things, and I put one or two out while I was still in England. And then I just started editing them sort of once a week or once every 2 weeks, just depending on how busy my schedule was doing other stuff. But it has taken from August, well, probably July, I'll put the first one out, through till February this year to get them all out. But in between, I've been putting out a few New Zealand episodes as well, of course. They're not all it's not all been wings over Britain. But
No.
It's quite good. They kind of all drip feed out. So
yeah, good. It's a nice flow as well. And I read out the some of those episodes a moment ago. I think there's something in there for everyone as well, from an aviation perspective. I think it was a nice rounded amount of content. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. But you've decided to come back. I mean, you probably haven't recovered from the last time. What's bringing you back then?
Well, I decided on the plane back from England that I had not seen enough. I mean, my plan had been originally I had decided I was going to go to England for 2023, and in 2024 I would go to
Black Oshkosh on steroids and by sending an Avro Vulcan.
On the way back from England, I thought, "Oh man, there's so much more I still want to see."
Potentially
I'm definitely going back to England in 2024. I don't care about Oshkosh anymore. Chile, and then as time's gone by,
USA and Canada.
Given it a bit more thought, and I was like,
"Did you?
Hey, why not both? You know, like
during the Second World War, a proposal was made to build B-29 super fortresses
drawn
in the UK,
mainly back
powered by Bristol Centaurus engines."
Well, I wanted to go back and see Legends flying Legends again, and then of course that got canned. But then Cywil suddenly came up, and I'm like, watching these adverts coming out every day, and I'm just like,
that explores the less well-trodden
parts. It's going to be so good, and then in the end, to hell with it, I'm going.
If your answers are no,
yeah, I'm heading back in time to go to the Cywil Air
Show. See what you're missing.
And I'm going to do a month in England again, catch up with some people. I'm going to do a much more relaxed version this time. It's not going to be traveling every day.
Because even in between,
then I'm going to Oshkosh on the way back.
I need to come back to that. But even in between, you know, all of those places I read out and those people, you met a lot of other people, as you said. I mean, we caught up in Southwest London. We had a chat with Matt Bone.
Yep.
Another podcaster, which was fun. You did a lot of that as well in between. I mean, you rammed a heck of a lot in.
I did.
Outside of Cywil and things like that, are you planning to produce more content for the Wings Over Britain podcast, or is this going to be more of a leisurely and enjoyable session just for you to watch and listen?
I haven't made any plans for more content to be recorded on this trip this year. However, I'm sure it's probably going to happen. I still have to work out exactly where I'm going and what my schedule's going to be. I should put something together. It's coming up fast too, so it's not far away to June. So, but there were a few that I missed out on last year because of various things that popped up and I had to cancel. I had arranged to meet up with some of the engineers at Shuttleworth, for example, and then unfortunately the train strike meant that I had to leave early. So so I missed out on that. So I might see if I can grab that next time. I don't know. There's a possibility that I might get, you know, a handful, maybe five recordings there. I'm not sure yet. So, but really I want to go back to some of the places I went this past, trip. I've got to go back to Duxford again, just to take in the atmosphere more and, see more stuff.
Did you know that during the Falklands War in 1982, there was a plan to put the Black Buck raids on steroids by sending an Avro Vulcan to bomb airfield targets on mainland Argentina, potentially returning to RAF Waddington the long way round via Chile, Easter Island, Tahiti, Hawaii, the USA and Canada? Did you also know that during the Second World War, a proposal was made to build B-29 superfortresses in the UK, powered by Bristol Centaurus engines? If your answers to the above are yes, you're probably a regular reader of The Aviation Historian, the quarterly journal, print and digital, that explores the less well-trodden paths of flying history. If your answers are no, visit theaviationhistorian.com and see what you're missing.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
Was there something you never got to experience last year, Dave, that you're wanting to do this time around?
Yeah. I definitely want to go down to Tangmere and around that area. The Tangmere was a base where number 485 New Zealand Squadron and 486 New Zealand Squadron were both based, and it's one of the places I'd love to get to see. Also, Headcorn is another place that was on my plan, and then it got cancelled. Just a chap I was travelling with, we sort of changed plans and did something else. So that hopefully might happen this year. There's meant to be an air show there, but I've heard that it could be not happening. So I don't know what's happening. So
There's a lot. There still seems to be a lot in abeyance for the displays this year. Certainly down my part of the world, it's pretty uncertain. The weather's also been pretty bad, and I know it's been winter here, but it's been very, very wet.
Right.
And some of the grass fields I know are struggling a bit in terms of condition, but hopefully by June we'll get to see the sun, the sun, and hopefully dry some of that out as well. Now, you mentioned Oshkosh. So traveling to the UK, I mean, what's that? Is that a 23-hour, 24-hour journey for you?
More than that. I think it's about 26, I think.
Gosh.
On the trip that I'm doing, one that I was looking at was 36 hours, but the one I'm doing is 26, and I'm going through Singapore. Going that
way. Who'd you fly with, Dave?
Flying up with Singapore Airlines and coming back, I'll cross from Britain to Chicago on United. And then after Oshkosh, I'm flying to Dayton. And I'm going to go spend a couple of days in Dayton and see the Air Force Museum. And I think that's United. I've got to check again, but I'm flying from Dayton to Ontario, which is in California, and that's right next door to Chino. So I'll spend 2 days at Chino as well. And then to LA to fly home to Auckland. So So there's a few flights in there, and hopefully I won't get the jet lag like I did with one long, 20-hour flight.
Going east is always challenging, though, isn't it? Flying west is not easy, but it's easier. So hopefully that'll be okay for you. So tell us, what's appealing in Oshkosh then?
It's the Mecca that I've always wanted to go to. I think I would have been about 13 years old when I first heard about it. Dad had a video that he got from somewhere. And It's just one of those things I've always wanted to do, and I've got a lot of friends who've gone there, and some of them go every year, and I just really, really want to go and experience at least once. So, and to see all the warbirds mainly, but it'd be great to see all the home builds and the classics and the float planes and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it.
And what's the plan for Oshkosh? I mean, I haven't been there, but know a few people who have been. Are you camping? Are you staying in a caravan, a hotel? What's the plan? And how many days are you planning to be there?
I am actually thinking about camping, and I'll be there from the 20th to the 28th. So,
the full week. Okay.
So,
and is Steve Bridgewater going this year?
I don't think he is. Oh, okay. So, pretty sure he said that he's got something else he has to do in England. So, which is a shame, because I would have loved to have, spent time with him there. But I'll see him in England, of course. But
He knows so much. I tried to get him on Extended the other day, and he was like, "No, I just don't know enough." And I was like, "Yes, you do. That's what I've asked." That's why I want you on a show. It's like, no, you need to speak to this person. They're more knowledgeable than me. And I was like, no, don't think so, Steve. So Is there going to be a Wings Over Oshkosh?
Again, I don't know.
Has to be.
I'll probably do something. I might do it at Wings Over America. Who knows? I'm going to Dayton and Juneau as well. So,
You got to do it, Dave. You got to do it.
I probably need to copyright this.
You have to copyright that. It's going to be snapped up otherwise. And are you planning to meet any of the airplane geeks or anyone else over in Oshkosh?
I've got a few people I'm going to be meeting up with. Andy Hines from Warbird Radio. One of my fellow hosts of Warbird Radio, because I ended up having a live show on Warbird Radio for a few years. And now Grant McKeeran and I have got a not live show. It's gone to non-live. So, I'll definitely be catching up with him, and I'll be staying with Andy at Dayton as well. There's lots of people that I'm hoping to catch up with at Oshkosh. It's going to be quite amazing. So,
What are you looking forward to seeing in Dayton? I mean, very jealous, I have to say, but on the bucket list, that one.
Yeah, it's just one of those places that you always hear about as being one of the greatest museums in the world, and the opportunities there. I'd really just need to go and see it. I don't know a huge amount about it, other than that it's got an amazing collection of aircraft. And a mate of mine said to me, "Hey, why don't you go to Dayton? It's not that far from Oshkosh." And I just looked at the map and thought, that's possible. So, yeah, I'm going to do it.
That's doable. And Dave, just, I suppose, taking a step back, obviously we've talked a lot about New Zealanders in either the war over in Europe or in other parts of the world, and we've had the Coastal Command series. What are the sort of links with the US from historical terms? Would New Zealanders, from my dad, for example, he went to train in Canada, he went via the US. Was that something that New Zealanders did as well?
Yeah, a lot of the New Zealanders in the fleet era trained in the US with the US Navy, just like the Brits. The Kiwis who joined the fleet era would all jump on a ship and go all the way to Britain. They would do the course at St. Vincent. I think some of them did a few other courses there, and then they'd be put on a ship would be put on a ship and sent to the States, and they'd go through places like Crow's Hill and Pensacola and places in Florida and all that, and all the guys that ended up on Corsairs or Avengers or Hellcats, they all went through the US Navy training. There was, I don't know, maybe at least 1,000 Kiwis who did that. That's one aspect of the history between New Zealand and the States. But of course, during the Pacific War, the New Zealand squadrons were under the command of the US in the Pacific. It's really interesting. At a place like, say, take Guadalcanal, there would be a number of US Marine Corps squadrons. There'd be a number of US Navy squadrons. There would be US Army Air Force squadrons, and there'd be RNZF squadrons. And they're all within the group or the wing or whatever the Yanks called it. And at the top, there'd be an American general, and the second in command would be a New Zealand wing commander or group captain. It's interesting that New Zealanders were totally part of the US forces in the likes of Guadalcanal and Bougainville, all those, key places in the Solomons. And they get sort of forgotten now that they were some of the squadrons that were there. But, we had Kitty Hawk squadrons, and later they went to Corsairs. We had Hudson squadrons. We had Ventura squadrons. We had Catalina squadrons, Dakotas, all sorts of things flying up there. And all part of the big key effort to rid those areas with Japan. So, you know, and they all got on really well. They were all part of the same force, basically. And so there's always that cooperation. But, you know, you look at today, there's a lot of sort of good stuff going on between Kiwis and Americans in aviation. And, you know, I have to mention right now, as of this week, we've had another mosquito fly at Ardmore after a restoration, and that's going off to the States. And this will be the fourth one that's been restored by Avspex and Mosquito Aircraft Restoration Limited. And all of those have gone to the States, and this one will go too. So, you know, we're keeping their warbird scene supplied with the better aircraft. I mean, you know, quite a few Kitty Hawks and Spitfires, all sorts of things have been restored here and gone off to the States. So,
why is that? Why is New Zealand such a hotspot for those restorations? Is it a particular skill set, or what is it? Because you know, we're still trying to get it together here in the UK to get one flying, and as you say, the fourth one's gone off to the States, or flew this week, and it's off to the States. What is it about New Zealand?
I think there's several factors. You know, economically, with the exchange rate, that's always been sort of favourable because the American dollar's worth a lot more than ours. But that's only one of the factors, and there's definitely a huge skill set and experience in New Zealand with guys that, you know, on this mosquito, there at least half the team have worked on all four of the mosquitoes, probably more than that, probably more like three quarters of the team between the two companies have worked on all four of the mosquitoes. And that's going back to 2012, the first one flew, and that was after an 8-year restoration. So that's a long time to be working on these things and gaining all that knowledge. And as well as the, you know, the experience and the skill set, they're really, really good people. They're real friendly, laid back, no hassles, you know. And you do hear of a number of restoration shops around the world where they're either a really closed shop or there's, you know,
a lot of politics, isn't there?
Politics, yeah.
Restoration environment. Yeah. I think we talked a bit about it with Matt. I was very naive about it all, I must admit, but he put me right. Dave, just coming back to that sort of World War II, New Zealand, US relationship, is there any, I mean, you know, over here, there's a lot of lasting legacy around, and obviously there was a strong war effort supported by the Kiwis into the Allied forces. Is there a lasting legacy like that in the Pacific region, in New Zealand or the States, in that relationship?
There's not a lot. There's a few memorials around New Zealand. I think there's one in Central Wellington marking the arrival of the American troops when they first arrived here, things like that. But there's not really much, you know. In England, you can go down any street and you'll find some sort of historic site or a memorial or all that kind of thing. And it's not really the case in New Zealand. Our history is a lot shorter, and I think that people haven't really gotten on to the fact that we should be remembering things better, like the Brits do and the Europeans.
Well, I don't know. We're beginning to lose some of that as well. It's an interesting dynamic that, you know, as the generations, and I know you make a really strong point of this on the Wings Over New Zealand podcast, you know, as those generations are now almost completely gone, so too are many of the memories and the stories and the sense, you know, my daughter is a granddaughter of a World War II veteran, you know, her interest in it is quite upsetting, really. And it's because of the world they're in, and it's great that people like your good self are going out and recording those legacies so that we that we have them. What's on the program then once you return from, you know, your worldwide, because it is literally you're going around the world this time. When you return from this, what's the plan for the Wings Over New Zealand for this year? Have you got any good content in the pipeline coming up?
There's some that will hopefully go out before I leave. Actually this coming Sunday, I've recorded an episode to mark the 80th anniversary of The Great Escape, which if you watch the film and that's all you knew about it, which is pretty much all I knew about it, apart from a little bit of reading, you would have no idea that there were quite a few Kiwis involved in it. So we sort of recorded an episode about the escape itself and the prison camp, but also highlighting the Kiwis, three of which who were murdered among the 50. Yeah. So they'll go out this Sunday. I've got a few other things in the pipeline, but looking towards when I get back from England, no, I've got no idea.
It's a good thing about podcasting, isn't it? But listen, one of the things that's really triggered me off thinking is I'm reading a lot about Burma and India here at the moment. And again, New Zealand and Australia come up a fair bit in some of the bits I'm reading there. And we recently did the Hong Kong episode, and I'm just more intrigued about the Pacific War now, and I think that's an area maybe to cover a little bit later this year.
If I can help, I will. I think from the British perspective, the Pacific gets ignored because I think most Brits just think, well, that was an American war. Well, it wasn't just an American war. Of course, the Brits were in it, the Australians were in it, the Kiwis were in it, the Dutch were in it. You know, the Fijians, they were the most incredible fighting unit of the war, as far as I'm concerned. And nobody even knows about what the Fijians did, you know. So, you know, all of them plus the Americans. Right now I'm listening to the audiobook of Will Iredale's Kamikaze Hunters, and absolutely loving it. You know, and I've over the years, I talked with a lot of guys from here in New Zealand who were in the Fleet Air Arm, and a lot of them were in the British Pacific Fleet, which is what this book is about. And their story is so untold. The British have no idea that they had this massive fleet in the Pacific that was attacking Japan and Japanese oil refineries, all that sort of thing. And, you know, the Americans don't know either. It never gets mentioned in American books. And this is one of the things that these veterans, they kept pointing out, we've been totally forgotten, you know. And it was annoying to them. And I just think that it would be great if you do something on what the British and Commonwealth was doing in the Pacific, and, you know, Southeast Asia and all that. It'd be great to cover that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm creeping eastwards, Dave. I was in India. I'm now in Burma. I'm reading just a fascinating book, and it actually started with the Coastal Command series, and it's a book called Liberators Over the Atlantic.
Oh, right.
Because I sort of fell in love a bit with the Liberator after the Coastal Command episodes, and it's a fabulous book. Very, very detailed story of a Liberator pilot, but he comes back to the UK after doing that ferry and Liberators and then Coastal Command, and then he goes on to train to fly Torbos and bow fighters, and he does that a bit off of the North Coast, and again it was the Coastal Command. It was just like written for that series, really. But he then gets sent off to India and Burma to fly by both fighters against the Japanese. And it's just a fascinating insight. But even he says in the book, you know, when he's reading the newspapers back from home that, you know, are weeks old, there's no mention of the war in the East, unless it's Hong Kong or Singapore or somewhere like that.
Right.
So in good extended fashion, I do like to cover stories that, you know, are a bit not necessarily mainstream. So I think that will be something that maybe we'll look at. Maybe when you come back, we'll sit around the table and see about how we're going to cover that. I've got some interesting guests lists in Australia, talk about the carrier fleet that's out there and that sort of thing. So yeah, exciting. But listen, let's come back to the Wings Over Britain. Just to wrap up then, Dave, what was the most amazing thing about the Wings Over Britain process you went through last year?
I don't know. It's hard to pin down anything that's most amazing. I mean, going to East Kirkby and seeing the Lancaster running its engines and taxiing about, that was fantastic. And then seeing the other Lancaster, the BBMF one, displaying at Shuttleworth. First time I've ever seen a Lancaster in the air. It was also the first time I've ever seen a B-17 in the air. I went to Flying Legends in Yorkshire with Steve Bridgewater, and he kept looking at me and saying, "The smile on your face," you know, because I had this the hugest grin for 2 days just watching all the stuff that I'd never seen before. Swordfish. I mean, seeing the swordfish in the air, you know, you just don't get to see that anywhere else in the world. And things like, a dozen Spitfires. You just don't get to see that anywhere else in the world. And I think the Brits are just so blasé about some of the stuff that you have at air shows. You don't realize how special it is. And, it's mind-blowing when I look back and think about all the things I saw that I'd always wanted to see over a lifetime.
Yeah.
And it was all packed into a couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's another quite reason why I want to go back, is just see more cool stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of things that didn't happen because of the weather. If the wind got up at Shuttleworth, and there was wind at Flying Legends, so I never got to see a Gladiator flying or things like that.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but maybe I could get to see it this time, you know.
Well, no doubt it's slightly more leisurely and a sedate pace. But Dave, before we let you go, where can we find you, the podcast and the blog online?
Yeah, well, if you just Google Wings Over New Zealand, you'll find the forum and you'll find the podcast. Wings Over New Zealand Show is the podcast. It's on iTunes and all the other Spotify, all that crap. you'll find it anywhere. Anywhere you get a podcast, any decent place you get a podcast, you should find Wings Over New Zealand Show. The forum, just Wings Over New Zealand, and you'll find that. Wings Over Cambridge is the website about the people from my hometown who served in the Air Forces during the war. That's pretty much where you'll find me.
Dave, thanks so much. That's it. We'd like to thank White Hearts for our music, and of course Mick Oakey at the Aviation Historian for his support. We'd also like to thank Simon Jakubowski, Aviation Enthusiasts Book Club, and Andy Wright at Aircrew Book Review. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter X, and you can find Tim, Ellie, and Gareth on the extended Twitter, Facebook, Threads, and Instagram feeds. If you've got some ideas for new episodes, we talked about the Pacific there, drop us a line, you know how to get a hold of us. But that's it. With the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Dave.
Goodbye, and thank you.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The program's produced with a Creative Commons license.
Please leave us a review wherever you play your podcast. It genuinely helps grow our program and broaden its reach. You can also review the program and leave us feedback on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us, our email address is getinvolved@aviationextended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended.
from across the globe, from the centre of aerospace. And now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
Extend it!
This is XTP Media.